North Korea is now demonstrating that it has options and that it is prepared to exercise those options.
North Korea vows to change tactics if U.S. sanctions remain. It's Wednesday, January 2nd. This is VOA Asia. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We're glad to have you with us. You'll find us on Facebook at VOA Asia. It's okay to sit. It's all on today's VOA Asia. North Korean leader Kim Jong-un says he is beginning the new year with hopes of more nuclear talks with U.S. President Donald Trump. But he expressed his dissatisfaction with Washington's pressure tactics. During his televised New Year's speech Tuesday, Kim said he's ready to continue direct discussions with Trump with the aim of reaching an agreement to reduce tensions and perhaps lessen a nuclear threat. He says, I'm always ready to sit down again with the U.S. president at any time and will make efforts to produce an outcome that the international community would welcome. However, if the U.S. miscalculates our people's patience, forces something upon us, and pursues sanctions and pressure without keeping a promise it made in front of the world, we have no option but to explore a new path in order to protect our sovereignty and achieve peace on the Korean Peninsula. Kim also said the United States should continue to halt its joint military exercises with ally South Korea and not deploy strategic military assets to the South. VOA Asia's Ira Melman spoke via Skype about Kim's speech with Evans Revere, senior advisor at Albright Stonebridge Group. Revere served as acting Assistant Secretary of State for East Asian and Pacific Affairs and has hundreds of hours of negotiating experience with North Korean officials and frequently participates in official and informal dialogues with Pyongyang's representatives.
It lays down a very clear marker with the Trump administration. That despite all of the promises and commitments that were made or allegedly made, North Korea is now demonstrating that it has options and that it is prepared to exercise those options if the United States does not give Pyongyang what it wants. And obviously what Pyongyang wants is the easing of sanctions, and it wants the United States essentially to back off in its effort to compel North Korea to take denuclearization steps. You'll notice that the word denuclearization only appears once in the entire speech, and it's very carefully placed there right next to a reference to the June 12th declaration that was produced in Singapore. Both the United States and North Korea came out of that meeting with completely different definitions of what that word meant. And in the U.S. view, denuclearization means what the dictionary says it means, the end of North Korea's nuclear weapons program. And for North Korea, it means something very different. It means something called the denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula, which means the elimination of the U.S. war-making capability against North Korea, both on the peninsula and near the peninsula. So you have two very different views of denuclearization. And what the North Koreans are saying is that they are tired of hearing Secretary Pompeo and other members of the administration talk about denuclearization as the U.S. defines it. So that is the unilateral demand that Kim Jong-un refers to in his speech.
So in your view, apparently, there is no change from past views of the North Korean leader. Is that correct?
I would say that that is exactly right. Yes, the North Koreans continue to define the situation on the Korean Peninsula as one in which they believe that they are under threat, nuclear and otherwise, by the United States, by the U.S.-South Korea alliance, by the presence of U.S. assets in the region. And until the United States and its allies do something about that, and until the United States takes action unilaterally as well as multilaterally to get rid of sanctions, North Korea is telling the United States that everything that was achieved or that might have been achieved as a result of the Singapore summit in June could fall apart.
Is there any possibility, or is there a possibility of somehow reaching some kind of concession by bringing in South Korea. There seems to be a better chain of communication between North and South Korea now than there is with the United States.
Well, there certainly is a very lively and very active chain of communication between Seoul and Pyongyang. It took all of just a few minutes for the Blue House to praise Kim Jong-un's speech. South Korea seems to be keen to play intermediary. But here's the rub. In Kim Jong-un's speech, he makes reference to the need to cease joint military exercises in South Korea. He also makes reference to the need to stop importing weapons and military equipment. That demand is not directed at the United States. It's directed at South Korea. What it effectively is an open attack by the North Korean leader on the U.S.-South Korea alliance. And the message to the South Korean government that he's conveying in the speech is essentially that you, the South Korean government, now need to make a choice. Continue the process of reconciliation with us, or continue to be a part of the U.S.-South Korea alliance. It's up to you to make that choice. That's basically my summary of the message that I believe Kim Jong-un is conveying to Seoul. So Seoul is now in a very, very difficult position having to make that choice because it is one of the major things that Kim Jong-un demanded of the South Koreans in that speech.
Stay with VOA Asia as we hear more from Evans Revere on the effect of the U.S. Defense Secretary's resignation. These are among some of the top Asia stories that you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. North Korea says it will change tactics if U.S. continues with sanctions. Indonesia landslide leaves 15 dead, 20 still missing. Coronation of new Thai king is set for May. Expanded coverage of these stories and much more can be found on Facebook at VOA Asia. You can also stop by the voanews.com website. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. VOA Asia continues as we continue our conversation with Evans Revere on Kim Jong-un's New Year's message and how personnel changes in the Trump administration affect the narrative going forward.
With Mattis's departure, the United States has lost arguably one of the strongest advocates for the U.S.-South Korea alliance in the United States government, which is not to say that there aren't others, but he was one of the most ardent advocates of that alliance. And President Trump, over the last several years, including recently, has made it fairly clear that he is not a fan of alliances. He regards them as entangling. He has demanded that our alliance partners pay more for the defense that we provide them. And he has been quoted as saying some fairly derogatory and negative things about the USROK alliance, including, according to one report, asking his staff why we continue to provide for the defense of South Korea. And he asked, why can't we bring the troops home? So put that attitude, which is ascribed to President Trump, in the context of the North Korean demand of a progressive government in Seoul that South Korea takes steps to begin to distance itself from the United States, and you have a fairly dangerous potential here. Beyond that, the United States and South Korea have been involved in negotiations to increase South Korea's contribution to burden sharing. In other words, the amount of funds and support that South Korea provides for the alliance. Those talks have pretty much broken down now because the United States has demanded a very significant increase in South Korean burden sharing payments and South Korea's reluctance to do that. So the scene has now been set for a very problematic period in U.S.-South Korea relations because of North Korea's demand, because of the breakdown in the burden sharing talks, and because we now have a president who has expressed interest in the past in bringing U.S. troops home. This is a pretty dangerous combination of factors.
Is there an actual possibility of moving South Korea closer to North Korea than they are to the United States?
A year or two ago, I would have said that's pretty much impossible. What has transpired in the last year is a remarkable series of conversations and exchanges and negotiations that have taken place between North and South Korea, in which there has been significant progress, some of it quite substantial, in reducing tensions, enhancing dialogue and cooperation, discussing future cooperative projects, so much so that it has, as I mentioned earlier, gotten some people in the United States nervous that things are moving too far and too fast between Seoul and Pyongyang. Combine that with the fact that one of North Korea's aims from the beginning has been to try to drive a wedge between the United States and its South Korean ally, and that South Korea has willingly and enthusiastically even carried some of North Korea's water in its own dialogue with the United States, encouraging the United States to take certain actions to ease up on sanctions and to introduce more conciliatory measures in its own position. So you already have the South Korean government acting in a fashion, I wouldn't say as North Korea's agent, but acting in a fashion with North Korea that one would never have imagined a year or two ago. We are in uncharted waters right now. The speech, it contains, as I said, a pretty explicit attack on the U.S.-South Korea alliance. And beyond that, the statement by the North Koreans that they might seek a new path or a new way to defend their country's sovereignty, I think, is a pretty explicit reference to their preparedness to resume nuclear and ballistic missile testing in the coming months, if things do not go their way. That ought to be of concern to us, and it's an attempt to blackmail the United States, and I use that word advisedly.
Evans Revere, senior advisor at Albright Stonebridge Group, speaking with VOA Asia's Ira Melman. You're listening to VOA Asia. This news alert from VOA Asia: rescuers recovered six more bodies buried under tons of mud from a landslide that crashed onto a hilly village on Indonesia's main island of Java, bringing the death toll to 15, according to local officials. The landslide plunged down surrounding hills just before sunset Monday and buried 30 houses. Visit VOA Asia Facebook each day for this and more. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, you might want to sit down for a minute as VOA's Rick Pantaleo breaks this news to you.
This is Science in a Minute.
The authors of a new study published in the American Journal of Public Health have set out to dispel what they call myths surrounding other recent studies that suggest sitting for long periods of time now provides the same health risks as smoking. While study authors say they do agree that excessive sitting, roughly more than 8 hours a day, can increase the risk of premature death and some chronic diseases by 10 to 20%, it doesn't even come close to the hazards associated with smoking. The new study proposes that there is an approximately 180% increased risk of death of any cause from smoking. Terry Boyle, an epidemiologist from the University of South Australia and one of the study's authors, says the simple fact is smoking is one of the greatest public health disasters of the past century. Sitting is not, and you really can't compare the two. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. We'd love to hear from you. There are many great ways that you can get in touch with us. You can send us an email, voaasia@voanews.com, or you can send us a message on Facebook, VOA Asia Facebook. You can also hear us on the radio, Voice of Chungrung, Star Radio, FM 88.3, at Chungrung Christian University in Tainan, Taiwan. We thank everyone there who's tuned into our program today. We also thank our director, Tracy Carter, engineer Kelvin Fowler, our managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team. That's Skylar Ogden, Ira Melman, Doug Bernard, Keith Lane, and Anna Cook. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. Have a nice day.